Time for Mac Break Weekly. What a great show we're going to have. Justin Robert Young is here, Andy Iannocco, and we're going to unbox this new 7-inch tablet from Google. Could this be a harbinger of what's to come from Apple? Stay tuned. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 308, recorded July 17th, 2012. The Monkey's Got a Gun. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Smile Software, makers of the new Text Expander 4, which dramatically increases the ways you can automate your work with advanced fill-in snippets. Great for creating form letter templates that can be customized on the fly. Learn more at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the fast and easy way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone from your home or office. Find out what your gadget is worth at gazelle.com. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at carbonite.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, visit audible.com/MACBREAK. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Going to be the silliest one on record because look who's here. Andy Iannocco and his friends Mel and Carl. Love that picture. Looks like an Annie Leibovitz, but it's like probably a fake Annie Leibovitz.
I think if it weren't Annie Leibovitz, they'd both be like 87-year-old men naked and hugging, and I don't think
we don't know what's under that
coat. This is probably the best way to go with that picture.
I love it. Andy writes for the Chicago Sun-Times and, of course, is a regular Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay is traveling once again, but good news. We've got a fill-in that is just going to make it so much fun. And this is why it's going to be silly. I was just being silly about being silly. This is really silly.
Sure.
Justin Robert Young.
Hi.
Of the NSFW show and Really Weird Things.
Weird Things, the podcast. Yeah.
Podcast, yeah.
That's it. Yeah, me, Brian Brushwood, and Andrew Main talk about the week's worth of weird news, and it's a fun time. So
anything that you have that you want to throw in that's weird for the Mac Break Weekly show, please do. It's kind of, we're all in kind of this
it's a holding period.
Yeah.
Right?
Because the iPhone 5, presumably this fall, and maybe a 7-inch iPad. There seems to be a lot of rumors, but there's nothing. Apple, you know, I think they're off for the summer.
Yeah, well, or like it's one of those things where it's like you go to Disney World and they're just the high, you know, panels are up, and it's
right.
Like building something
right.
Soon.
Coming,
you know?
Soon.
Yeah, be available this fall.
Right.
So I'm sure they're hard at work somewhere down in Cupertino. The elves are cobbling.
Meanwhile, you hear a jet ski revving like in the behind the partition.
Well, that's the funny thing about Apple.
For everybody, woo!
It doesn't
exactly.
Say coming
a
soon.
A dolphin like just makes a noise. I mean, like, what the hell is going on back there?
There's a dolphin and a jet ski. With Apple, they don't even say coming soon. They just, there's nothing here. There's pay no attention to anything behind.
Move along, citizen.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the iPad 4S is the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Keep buying it.
Until we say otherwise.
That's where, by the way, we were talking about this on Twit on Sunday, and it seemed that Microsoft made a strategic error when it announced the next version of Windows Phone, Windows Phone 8, and at the same time said any existing phones sold will not be upgraded. And, oh, by the way, please buy these old phones. It's like, what kind of marketing? That's just, I mean, Apple's got it right. Don't say anything until it's ready, right?
Yeah. Well, and then same thing with the tablet, with the new
Surface.
Microsoft.
Well, that I understand because Microsoft doesn't have anything to cannibalize. And what they're hoping to do is, please, don't buy anything from Apple or Android stuff because we're going to have something soon.
It's going to be really amazing. As soon as we let journalists touch it, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
It'll be really, really amazing.
Meanwhile, Apple's right. They don't say anything.
Yeah, but don't you kind of prefer the way that Microsoft handles things? Because isn't it good to at least say, well, here's what we're working on, here's where we're going, so that at least the market can prepare for it and also the market can react to it? I mean, when you just drop things on people's heads immediately, you don't really know if people are going to understand what the thing is about.
It's good for us. Gives us something to talk about. Otherwise, we're talking about speculation. I think it's bad for the business, though, because you get – don't you – I don't know. It seems like Apple's got it.
Their business or...
For their business. Good for our business, bad for their business, right?
Because I mean, it's hard to say it's bad for their business when they're the most successful business ever, right?
It was right to say to announce the Surface.
Microsoft.
Okay. It was right to announce the Surface. I'm saying the Windows Phone 8 is exactly the opposite of Apple does it, which they're pre-announcing a product that is not available, and furthermore saying that anything you buy between now and whenever it is available will not be upgraded.
I mean, it doesn't seem like they're very consumer-focused.
I just don't get it.
Like...
I agree. It's right, Andy. It's right for us. Yeah. It gives us something to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know. So maybe they kind of have to bite the bullet there, where they realize that they have to pre-announce Windows 8 to get more developer support for it.
Right.
You know that one of the first questions is going to be, what about Windows 7 phones? And it's not dropping the bomb is a lot stupider and a lot more damaging than saying we are eager to support all of our existing devices and existing customers while still showing them the wonderness of the future of the platform. Which is when I was writing my reviews of a couple of different Android phones ship with Android 4.0, and of course, Android 4.1 was just released. Every time I was trying to get quotes or are you committed to doing an update so that one day your existing consumers will be able to use 4.1, and you get the two paragraphs of forward looking statements and boilerplate saying we are thrilled with the support for Android 4.1 that Google has provided as our strategic limited partnership in the United States. And it's like, okay, so you're saying that you don't want to tell us to go.
Yes.
So you're right, Andy. You know what? I'm going to take it back. I think Microsoft's being unusually candid with consumers and giving them the choice to make a choice, which, you know what, I should commend them for it.
I mean, I don't know.
Even if it's possible they're doing it by accident, realize this is a huge company with lots of divisions that aren't talking to each other quite as much as they should. You'd be surprised. I mean, I think everybody who's dealt with these large companies, there are times when you're talking to a vice president, sometimes when you know something that he seems to not know.
Right.
There was one time I will mention, it was like 4 years ago when I'm on the train for my meeting, for my briefing, having this briefing with this guy, and I get this piece of news about how another division of the same company was doing a product. I assumed it was going to be, oh, so is this thing you've just told me about, does it work really, really well with blah, 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 blah? I said, what do you mean? Your other division said that you're also doing a desktop operating system with. When did this happen?
Yeah.
I had to take a device out. This is what I read. And he's reading, and he dropped his guard for a good, 11 seconds before he went back into, well, we're part of a larger company. This is this is part of a larger vision, and this interview's over.
That's a measure of how well somebody's been media trained.
Finish
how
they get out of the suite.
How they can deal with those moments when they get blindsided by something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Microsoft thing, it just seems like they're dealing with a lot of different... They have a lot of different people to please. You know, like Apple pleases above and beyond, above anything else, consumers. Their relationship with consumers is the only thing that they care about, and everything else kind of feeds.
Yeah, but what I think Andy's saying, which is a kind of a new way to contextualize it I hadn't thought of, is that what Microsoft's done is better for consumers, because at least a consumer can make an informed decision now. You buy a Windows Phone 7 and knowing that it's not going to be upgradable. We don't know what anything about the new iPhone. For instance, I'll give you a really good example. We're all speculating about the connector in the new iPhone.
Yeah.
And Apple's not saying, wouldn't it be very nice of Apple to say, hey, well, don't buy any more 30-pin stuff.
Before you spend $400 to have that hard dock connector installed inside your $30,000 car, you might want
to. That would be dealing with customers, you know, really honestly to their detriment, because then people are going to stop buying 30-pin stuff, including the iPhone 4S.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I think maybe, all right, you know what, you, Andy, this is rare, but you have actually completely flipped me over. I think you're right. Microsoft was very honest and forthright and said and told people, look, this is a great, and you know, I think Lumia is a nice phone. I don't knock it.
Yeah.
But don't expect to upgrade it. And by being honest, I think maybe, okay, I'll give him some points.
But the other aspect of this is, remember that there is such a thing as institutional personality that spreads beyond what any one executive wants to do. There is actually a personality that's consistent to a company. And remember that this is a company that has never had the entire destiny of a product in their hands before. Even if they wanted to maintain a super top secret phone or tablet until the day of release, it's always been Microsoft comes up with an idea. They have to propose it to a bunch of hardware manufacturers. The hardware manufacturers might talk about it, might not. It's possible that a CEO gets bored during an interview and starts talking about this wonderful plan. They never had the ability to keep the tight lid on something. So I think that it became institutionally part of their character to not worry about keeping something secret until the last minute. Maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, after they have launched their first completely in-house product, and they realize that, wait a minute, why are we letting people like say mean things to us about how they wouldn't let anybody type the keyboard? We kind of invited that hurt upon ourselves. We're just going to like have our little retreats in Sonoma, work on our little project, and then show it off in one big event.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what Apple is saying. One thing they've done is they've released the third beta of iOS 6 to developers. And I guess I'm guessing that we're pretty close to the ready to manufacture. I mean, they talked about this fall, and I presume that it is with new hardware. But when you get to the third build, 3 weeks after the previous build, sounds like we're getting pretty close. Of course, nobody who has it will talk. So even if Andy, for instance, had it, he couldn't talk about it.
Had iOS 6?
Right. Because you're
for the beta?
You're enjoined if you're a developer from talking.
I don't know.
Do you have it?
I can certainly.
No. People talk to me on Twitter. I asked today on Twitter. People said that it was.
What'd they say?
That it was a huge an upgrade for them in terms of a lot of the bugs that they were seeing before, specifically in terms of it flashing back to the Apple screen but not actually restarting.
So that is not fixed?
No, that is fixed.
It is fixed.
I mean, they're noticing. I mean, they've only had it for 2 days, but the stuff that they noticed 2 days in on the previous builds are not a problem in this particular beta. But, I mean, give them time. Let them kick it around a little bit.
So, of course, Jan, people are leaking. This is from Mac Rumors, of course, which always has it. Eric Slivka running. One key addition, new section in the settings app for Maps, allowing users, I like this, to change the volume of the navigation voice to set distances in miles or kilometers, and to set map labels to display either in the local language or always in English, and map label sizes to either normal or
large.
I'll
tell you, I think that's going to be it's going to be helpful for me, and I'll get into this because my pick is actually a GPS app, but I think it interacting with when you're listening to an audiobook or music or something, having a variable volume for me personally will be a great change in my life.
And I like the idea of using Siri to interact with a map.
It's like, I think these are the really cool things that are going to separate the best super phones in the future, because it's taken a while for every one of the major platforms to have. Now everything has 4G. Now everything has cut, copy, and paste and super sophisticated things like that. Now it really is going to become a race of inches as we figure out which one has those little touches that make you feel as though this is the one that you want to keep backing. I mean, I'm still using the Galaxy 3 as my primary phone. I'm still using my iPhone as for actual phone calls and texts. But this is like where I'm getting like most of my navigation and most of my like in-car audiobook and stuff entertainment from. I like the idea that the default action seems to be when the navigation needs to make a notification. Not only does it automatically pause whatever's playing, but it actually has a way apparently of communicating to say, why don't you don't pick up exactly where you left off, pick up about one half second or one full second before where you left off. So if I'm listening to an audiobook, for instance, it's like, and then Gimli picked up his sword and turned left on Route 1 in 30 miles. Picked up his sword. It's almost exactly as though an actual narrator got interrupted and couldn't just simply pick up mid-syllable. He had to start off. What sentence was I reading at that time?
And That's what it does in the new Android. Like, it'll pause your content, save the directions, and then reset it.
It seems as though every time a system needs to say something. Now, I don't know the details. I'm going from the experience I've had over the past 2 or 3 weeks with this.
Yeah.
And it seems as though every time a system level alert has to happen, either saying, "Hey, you've got a new text message," or "Hey, turn left at the next junction," whatever app I happen to be in does that sort of pause behavior.
Yeah. No, that's been my experience on the S3 as well. And I don't know who does that. If it's the app doing that, if it's the Galaxy doing that, if it's Android doing that, I don't know. But it's good.
If so,
it's not like that on iOS 5.
You miss a bit.
No, it'll be like they're talking over each other. So my GPS app will be like, at Petaluma Boulevard,
and then
turn right on.
He slapped me on my rumpus.
Sure, exactly.
And you don't want to miss.
When I'm listening to the audiobook of Rumpus Slappers, which is one of my favorites, I was listening, there's a great 20th anniversary audiobook of the first Heir to the Empire. And it was just an amazing...
The what?
Heir to the Empire.
What's that?
The Grand Admiral Thrawn.
I have no idea what language even Star you're Wars. Speaking Star Wars? Now. Oh, yeah. Star Wars.
So there's a great... And it's all recreated. It's one guy reading it, but it's kind of audio play style, and they have all the sound effects and everything.
Is that an Audible book?
It is Audible.
Save it for your pick, because awesome. We're going to have an Audible ad.
We'll talk later. More about it. But yeah. It's not as cool when you're hearing Han Solo negotiate with
Turn
Talon
left
Bard, and
on
in the middle
Mission
of it,
Street.
Yeah.
Well, I see. I don't know what at what level it's being done by the system. My favorite iPhone GPS app or navigation app is Motion X's GPS Drive. Mm-hmm. And it actually, I think, lets you choose. Do you when there's a system interruption, do you want the audio to mute out, or do you want the audio to pause and then resume? So it also has its own built-in iTunes player transport,
oh,
so you
wow.
don't have to leave the app to get there. So I don't know whether it's better off to have simply a system-level resource that controls it, or whether it's better to have individual apps and let them come up with their own clever responses. But
well, I think if it's an official Mac app, like the Maps, you know, would yeah. be, then that has to be, they have to solve that problem, and that's part of, you know, them taking over that responsibility from, you know, a official third-party app like what Google Maps was.
Other new features in iOS 6, road work, traffic accidents in the Maps app. That's great. Road work especially. I like that. Yeah. Answer and decline buttons for FaceTime calls have returned. iMessage on iPad is now accepting phone numbers as a valid contact info. Greater 3D flyover coverage in Maps. That's probably as they fly over cities, they can add them. Glyphs. You're going to have to explain what this means to me. Glyphs. Is this a Star Wars term? Glyph? Glyphs for bookmarks, reading list, and history in Safari. Oh, is that like an icon? A really right, small
when,
icon?
I believe it's when you... the mini icon that is associated with the URL that's provided by the server.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. I myself read about this on an openly publicly available website. And...
of course you did.
No. I do take that seriously. Whenever there's a question about like that, it's like, did I read about this on Mac Rumors or Apple Insider or TOEAW? Then, okay, yes. Then I can talk about the
Just for people who don't understand, when you're on an NDA, which apparently Andy is, a non-disclosure agreement, if something is publicly known, then you can talk about it because it's been busted already. And so this is stuff that's in the public domain, in effect. Because it's been written about.
Right. I would never confirm or deny that I'd actually seen anything actually happening on any build that I actually have.
Nor would you be allowed to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I am. My strength is at the strength of 10 men because my honor is pure.
Yes.
See, we should just have another Skype that's just an Andy Anatko puppet. And we could just switch to that and be like, well, I think the glyphs solution is a pretty good idea. Oh, Andy puppet.
Say hello to the nice folks, Andy.
Hello to the nice folks, Andy. Oh, Andy.
Andy puppet is not under non-disclosure.
Nice people today.
Exactly. And now all the iOS 6 features while Andy Anatko drinks a glass of water.
iCloud.com email addresses are being rolled out. So I'm still a me.com. But now we will have iCloud.com as new mobile or replacements for the mobile me addresses, which is good.
Man.
If you sign up for a new Apple ID or enable mail on your iCloud account, you'll automatically receive an @iCloud.com email address instead of me.com.
The email addresses just seem like the one thing that they can never be comfortable with. You know, it's always,
First it was .Mac.
Mac, and then me.
Then it was me.
And then iCloud, and they always kind of announce it like, finally, we're done with the .Macs, in with the me.
So now I'm a mobile me user, and Mac.com and me.com still work, but can I be an iCloud? I should try it, see if I send something to me at iCloud.com.
I hope they do better with this than they have in previous times. There's so many times I still do not. I got my Mac.com address like the day that it was actually announced.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, every time there's been a change, I still don't know. All these new logins would say, enter your email address. It should be blah, blah, @mobileme.com. And I have to sort of tense up saying, okay, if I type in blah, blah, @mac.com, are you going to tell me that's not a valid address, even though technically it should? Oh, man.
No, it is. I think it genuinely is a problem, especially for what .Mac was and what MobileMe was in terms of being a subscription service. It just always seemed kind of weird that was something that was jerked around as much as it was.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, since it's being used as part of your Apple ID, or at least initially it transferred to your Apple ID, it became really, really important for that to be also part of sort of a locked in address that you're never going to lose. So, and even today, it's just that there's that category of stuff where if someone asks me a simple question about how something works, I think I know the answer, but I won't answer them until I've done like another 45 minutes worth of research so that I know that, no, there isn't some sort of a subtle thing that you haven't figured out yet about this. It really is the way that you think it was. So much of iCloud works exactly the way that it's supposed to work. But still, when you have these leftovers from MobileMe and Me.com, it's like, let me get back to you. If you're Gern Blanston at MobileMe, I don't think you can log in at me. Let me try out my own.
I really feel like there's some things Apple does really well, and then there's some things like cloud that Apple seems that I think they should just hire somebody who really knows. Of course, Microsoft's having trouble with it too.
I think part of the problem this is for some reason I think we're feeling this a lot more keenly in 2012 than in any previous year. People tend to forget that Apple is a regular company staffed by mortals. I'm serious. It's like the fact that something doesn't work properly, that doesn't mean that either A, this is the end of Apple, or B, that whoever is saying this doesn't work properly just hates Apple. He's a hater. Ignore the hater who says that this should be working this way instead of the other way. iCloud is a huge, huge undertaking. I would almost say it's as big as when they tried to transition from OS 9 to OS 10, where you kind of got it became clear pretty early on that they weren't going to turn this service on with one throw of one switch. It's going to be about throwing multiple switches, then watching multiple transformers blow. That's the only way they identify, okay, those are the transformers on the grid that were faulty. Let's fix those, throw the switch again and see what happens.
Well, but they've had a lot of faulty transformers in this particular product. Let's not forget hands where Steve Jobs brings the, and this was years ago, where he brought the entire .Mac team in.
And just said, shot should them be gangland style
basically,
against the wall.
He fired a lot of them and said, you should be ashamed of yourselves. You've let me down. You've let Apple down. You've let your coworkers down. This is crap. And I mean, that wasn't so long. That wasn't so recently. So this is an ongoing thing, isn't it, Andy?
I think we're talking about two different things. So the problem with MobileMe and .Mac were a problem where cloud-based storage and cloud-based software was a moving target for 5 or 6 years. It's only fairly recently that we started talking about the word iDisk precedes the word cloud storage by a number of years.
Right.
So by the time someone could take an idea, a really great idea, off the whiteboard and actually implement it, everybody who was shopping for that kind of a feature has already moved on to Dropbox or moved on to something by a smaller company who could be a lot more agile about how they implemented it. And by the time they finally figured out, nope, here is the fundamental thing that we're going to be calling iCloud. It is actually a basic service that we want every single piece of software to be able to access and support. And it's going to be supported on the OS level as fundamentally as any other service, as fundamentally as printing is being served. Once you get down to that level, it's not something that you can just simply drag into the Finder as a plugin. It really is an architectural feature. And whenever you do something that to the architecture, to the foundations of an operating system, it's just complicated as hell. I mean, I as much as actually probably more strongly than anybody else, because I have a lot of friends who are developers who are really just getting kicked right in the pants by iCloud day in and day out. I mean, solutions that they wish for solutions that would simply be difficult to implement. They're being faced with solutions that seem impossible to implement. And when they look to Apple for help, Apple is saying, we would be very interested to know what happens when you try that. You should go ahead and try that to tell us what happens.
Let us know how that worked out for you.
nonetheless, this isn't as bad as, like, you know, if Apple ever released an iPhone and the power button was actually like recessed by 2 millimeters, so you actually could only turn it on and off with a pen, that's kind of an obvious mistake. You could say, okay, whoever came up with that idea, they're a bunch of doofuses.
Yeah.
iCloud is more like they just have to. It's the hard boring of hardwoods, and they have to understand that it's going to take them a few years before they have everything wired up and everything working to everybody's satisfaction. And before that happens, there are going to be parts that work great and parts that leave people like and parts that really just cause rivers of blood to flow throughout the hallways of every hotel in Cupertino.
Is there anybody who's got it is doing it right, Andy or Justin? I mean, it feels like Google seems to be doing.
Google.
You know, yesterday Microsoft announced the new Office and that it's going to. This really surprised me. By default, Office on the desktop will save to SkyDrive, not to the local drive.
Well, so, I've had that for a couple of weeks now. And I've been using it. I'm trying to use it a couple hours a day. Microsoft is another good example. Their Office 2013 tries to move as much into the cloud as possible, or at least they try to make They're trying to make everything that you do to make your actual physical location, your actual physical device, irrelevant. It's so they're so all in on this that if you are away from your home from your office desktop, and you're on any other machine that runs Windows 7 or Windows 8, you can log into Office 365, and it will stream the binary of Office 2013 to that desktop. Meaning that it's not a web app. You will actually have a working running version of it, and you don't have to restart and reinstall.
That's amazing.
You don't have to do the whole thing.
You're kidding. I didn't know that.
And meanwhile, back at your office, it tells your office machine, oh, by the way, your user is using this registered copy elsewhere, so we're not going to let people use you. And if you have a Mac, or if you're running Windows XP, if you have just a studly browser, a lot of the functionality can be accessed through the web. And they're trying to make sure it works on touch tablets. They're making sure that the bottom line is they're trying to make sure it's completely relevant to this completely new face of computing we're seeing in 2012, 2013. And if anything, they're being a little less ambitious than you would hope on some fronts. It's a big deal that. But one of the things I love the most about 2013, I know this isn't Microsoft Office for Windows break weekly.
Well, but it's going to be on the Mac, and it's probably going to be in the iPad and the iPhone, so I think
germane. You see something that they have really, really taken lessons from Apple, where just as though we've argued pro and con about how a lot of the iWork apps, they have moved away from having you navigate to a physical location on your hard drive to open your documents to this app will manage your library. Right. You will not see a file picker. You will see a collection of documents. And now that's what Office does too. It's designed so that you don't have to work. You don't have to no longer have to train users to understand how to navigate the C drive. It will understand that there are a bunch of documents in this project. Some of them are on the cloud. Some of them are locally hosted. Some of them are on the local network, and it fixes all of that for you. And it really is an exciting time to be an observer of technology. I mean, I can't think of any. I can only think of the early 80s when everybody realized that command line stuff and text-based interfaces were no longer going to fly. We have to figure out how to build something that is relevant to the way that people want to compute in the late 80s and early 90s. It took a while for Microsoft to figure out how to build Windows and make it work, but they got there eventually, and to the betterment of hundreds of millions of Windows users. So similarly, all these companies, Apple included, are trying to figure out how do we transition from a situation where we know that the user is sitting behind a physical computer, even if it's a notebook, we know that they're tied to their digital identity is tied to this one device. Now we know that we don't know whether they're going to be observing and interacting with this information through a desktop with a big screen, a notebook with a low power processor, a handheld with a tiny screen. And we have to make sure that the services that we provide are agile and can project into any space that the user wants. It's not a trivial thing, and it's going to be embarrassing for a bunch of these companies for the next 2 or 3 years. But like Microsoft with Windows, eventually they're all going to get there.
And I do think this is what users want, right?
Well, I think there's a reason why this is a necessary growth point for Apple. And, you know, it's kind of in the face of part of their mythos, which is it just works. And that's why we feel this pain more acutely with Apple, because we're not used to it. We're not used to getting something that is this hyped.
And it just doesn't work.
And it's just, you know, that was why Siri, you know, especially in the early going, was amazing when it worked.
Right.
You know, and now I think it's a light years different product. If people kind of gave up on Siri, you know, through the first couple months and haven't played around with it lately, to me at least.
Try it again. You're saying try it again.
The uptime has been light years better. Yeah. It used to be 1 out of 4.
Right.
Things would just drop or not go. Now it's, you know, 1 out of every 30 that doesn't go.
So they're getting better, but I still say that Apple probably, this is one area where Apple has not got a great track record. And you're right, Andy, it needs to, because this is the future.
I think it's getting
like
better,
like it though. Or not. And I would agree with you. They're getting better.
It's going to be incremental.
They're not the best.
No, they're not.
Maybe Google is the best at this right now, with a Microsoft close second. Who's the best at this?
Google certainly has the greatest velocity. I can't think of a company that's turned around so many really struggling, mediocre products in the past 2 years. In this same, it's...
Faint praise.
No. I'm so totally serious. It's like I've gone from having respect for what they were trying to accomplish with Android phones to last year acknowledging that there are perhaps some people for whom an iPhone is not the best solution. Thank goodness they have this one alternative known as Android, to thinking, my goodness, this is a real Android 4.0, 4.1 are great handhelds.
I see you carrying that S3.
Now we have this Nexus 7, which is a legitimately great 7-inch tablet. You don't even have to say, well, because it's cheaper than the iPad, so if you can't afford an iPad, this is a legitimately great little tablet. And so, I mean, every company is struggling these
Steve
days.
Steve Jobs once told me this was 19. He was at Pixar. This was 1994 or somewhere around there. That Apple blew it. Now, remember, this is after he'd been kicked out at Apple. That Apple blew it, that they had a 10-year lead over Microsoft with the Macintosh. And by sitting back on their haunches, they let Microsoft catch up. And he felt that by Windows 3.1, they had caught up, that Apple had blown its lead. And in some respects, I feel like this is what happened, that that Apple let Google catch up.
Yeah, I don't think Microsoft caught up as in the mid-90s, but you're absolutely right. And this is something that I keep trying to restrain myself, because I think that I feel as though I'm hearing a lot of really defensive comments from my fellow like app Mac users and iPhone users and Apple fans, in that there's a group of people that have been laughing at the monkey that had all the parts, you know, he's there in the weapons depot behind the army barracks, like, oh look, he's playing with the barrel of that broken down gun, oh look, he accidentally managed to get the barrel on the hands, okay, well,
he's shooting
exactly, like,
run!
Isn't it funny, he's now grabbed one of the bullets, but he'll never figure out how to load it. Oh, look, he figured out how to load it. But he'll never figure out how to aim it. Oh, look, he figured out how to aim it. Well, but he'll never figure out how to pull the trigger. They don't see that this tails back nicely to what we've been saying earlier. We, as Apple users, we're expected to see a product for the first time and it's finished and it's perfect and it's beautiful and it's a work of art. They don't understand that that's unusual for the entire industry.
Yeah,
most companies are monkeys with a whole bunch of broken down parts in front of them, and it takes them a while to figure out how to put those parts together, but eventually, they're a monkey with a loaded gun pointed at Apple or any other competitor, and so it's time to stop laughing and time to figure out that nope, they got here. Windows has actually gotten here in terms of desktops.
Boy, that is a great metaphor, Andy.
Yeah. Well, and I think that Apple is the monkey with the loaded gun when it comes to the cloud. You know,
maybe it's the shoes on the other foot, or
they're putting that together because that's
guns in the other paw.
That's their monkey gun,
right? We're going to take a break. Andy, this is good. I like that.
We have a show title.
Yeah, Monkey with a Gun. Andy Iannacco's here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Justin Robert Young from Weird Things. And that little thing you do called NSFW.
NSFW
show. By the way, we've got to change the name because I went to NSFW.com. Don't.
Oh, good God. Why, sir?
It's NSFW show.
That's why we call it NSFW show.com. It's called
NSFW. I don't think anybody could ever put one of those in one of those.
It's pretty much that, Andy. It's as bad as I've ever seen.
We do a ribald show, but not that ribald.
Oh, that was ribald. So we got to change the name because that's bad. Take your paws off me, you filthy ape. Thank you, Sybil. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I do have a Nexus 7. I just came in the mail. Both the IAS and mine just came. We're going to unbox that a little bit and take a look at it. M.G. Siegler yesterday said, I mean, this is M.G., the Apple bigot, the guy who loves Apple. Suddenly, wow, like Andy is saying the same thing. Catch-up time. We'll also, we got lots more to talk about, including that Russian who's running the server that Apple just can't seem to shut down. But first, I want to talk about literally the most horrendously useful program ever. Every Mac should be included with this. It's Text Expander from Smile Software. And the new Text Expander, version 4, is Faboo. Faboo. do you use it?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. So let me tell you. Let me tell you the key to this thing. I got it. I always have it. I put it on every Mac. It sits in the Mac, and it waits for you. Let's see. I'll just show you. I'll open a sticky here. And I'll just show you as an example. Come on. Wait a minute. I guess I'm in full screen mode. Stickies. So I'll type something like, let's make this really big.
Let's make this giant so you can all see what I'm typing here. What it does is it expands your text. Now, it can do it in a couple of different ways. You can have an abbreviation like S-S-H-I-P, and it will just the reason I use two S's there because you'd never type that normally, and it will just expand it. I've set it up so it expands when I type tab, and then it just automatic. Well, apparently, I was wrong. That isn't I thought this was
may in fact be a moth.
maybe I've changed what I have in my boilerplate here. I have these are all in my boilerplate. No, it's not in this one. It's just one S. So let's do that again. I used to do SSHIP. Now I just type. Let's do it again. SHIP and type tab, and it puts in my shipping address and all of that. Did you see how that happened? And then even if you want, you can have it pause and fill in stuff. This is, for me, a huge benefit. You know, people often are asking me, who does our great album art? I say, well, they're by the wonderful Nitro, Zach, and Snaggy at the Joy of Tech Comic. Email them. I can type in. These are all the abbreviations I have in there. Now, this is another cool thing. These are in Dropbox. So they're automatically copied over from every machine. I have it in Dropbox. That's one of the things Text Expander will do. Text Expander is so sweet.
All right, so how much, because I actually want to.
You got, if you do, you do a lot of writing.
I do a ton of writing, and also I do a lot of repetitive
Anybody who does email now, is often typing the same thing over and over.
And I've been using a Gmail, Google Labs plugin, canned responses.
Yeah, but this does it across the Mac, everywhere.
Yeah, across the Mac.
Everywhere you're typing text. Version 4 adds fill-in snippet options like drop-down choices. So you could have home or office as my mailing address, optional sections. There's a great demo video you can find out more if you go to smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. Mac Sparky has done a little video here, David Sparks, on the fill-in feature that's very cool. If you've never used Text Expander before, see, I have snippets because I've been using it for as long as it's been around. But if you've never used Text Expander before, there's a new snippet creation assistant. This is what you'll use where you start it with snippets for entering repetitive information like email addresses, phone numbers. You can even paste in graphics. Anytime, you know, you can. I have my signature, my initials. Anytime you send the same thing over and over again, Text Expander will save you a lot of money. Now, version 4 just came out. If you purchase after January 15th, it's free. Otherwise, for registered users, $15 to upgrade. For new users, $35. Smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. They do not offer this through the Mac App Store because of the sandboxing requirements. But if you have Text Expander 3 from the Mac App Store, which is, I think, actually what I'm running here, you can get the upgrade price from Smile when you download version 4. So go to smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. Watch the video. Take a look at this. You'll save time and effort and keystrokes. It is fantastic. Filling out forms. It can fix your typos. You know, I have from Adam Engst, I have a Tidbits autocorrect that will automatically autocorrect all of these typos. There are hundreds of entries in here. And it will. And when I mistype something, it will automatically correct it. I love this. Text Expander. Get it. Use it. If you've got a Mac, you must have it. From smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. You know, I don't even shouldn't even have to do an ad for this. This should be a MacBreak pick every week, frankly. I live on this thing. Should I open this up? So you've had one for a while, Andy, huh? The Nexus 7?
Yeah, I've had one for a couple of weeks.
So people who ordered, as I did, the day they offered it on the Play Store are just now starting to get them. It shipped. Let me see if I can. This is a tight box.
If you go to play.google.com and try to order one, it ships at a very Apple-like 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is interesting because the high demand.
You need to cut that. Iaz had a hell of a time with the.
Really? Did he?
Yeah.
He doesn't have sharp fingernails like I do. You're right. This is
catalog.
This is some sort of special Kevlar vest. Wow. John's come with his big knife. But Andy, correct me if I'm wrong. The real key to this, if this were $400, $500, it would not be exciting. It's $200 is why it's exciting.
No. Well, okay. Yeah, okay. There are two components to it. Number one, yeah, it's exciting. That's $200, but not just because people would love to have an iPad that costs $200.
Right.
The sort of people who were not excited by the iPad are people who are put off by the price and put off by the size of it.
Right.
I realize that this is a 500. This is really almost identical to a laptop in the sense that it's a $500 device you have to carry around in a bag, and it's super slim and it's super light, and the battery lasts a super long time, but it still has all those drawbacks to it. Whereas this is well within the price range of an ebook reader. I mean,
right.
And $99 is now the cost of a black and white e-ink based Kindle device. The Kindle Fire, which really has to, I think, be regarded as an e-reader with benefits as opposed to a tablet, that costs $199. This is a real damn tablet. So this is just this morning I was out to breakfast and I was actually reading my MacBreak Weekly research on this. Fits in the front pocket of my 511 tactical pants, by the way, not even the back pocket, but the front pocket. And so I'm using it, and the waitress who's used to seeing me with technology asked me about it, and I explained to her what it was, and she played with it for a little bit. And said, "Wow, so it's cooler than the iPhone, but it's better than the iPad because it's small." And I didn't want to argue with her about like what was good or bad about the iPad versus this, but I'm like, this is an ordinary person who's not necessarily like obsessed about technology,
and this had a
more fundamental appeal to her than the iPad because it's smaller and it's more affordable.
Yeah,
that's a big deal.
I have for a long time. I had the 7-inch Galaxy Tab, and I think I was the only person, because I held it, who said, you know, this is the right size. Now, what was wrong about that was Honeycomb. The Honeycomb operating system was terrible.
Right, right.
And this is an example of Google, kind of like the monkey, assembling the gun.
Yeah.
They've got the bullet in the chamber now. This is pretty close. And do you think this is why Apple is so widely rumored to be doing a 7-inch tablet?
I'm not really sure. I think I honestly believe, and though this sounds naive, I think this is true. I don't think they would be even remotely interested in a 7-inch iPad or seven people. Would you believe that people have been correcting me about being wrong about a device that doesn't exist.
And is only been
rumored? People have said it's not a 7-inch tablet, it's a 7.85-inch tablet. I wonder if you'll have the guts to correct your mistake. Okay, whatever. Be somewhere between.
We probably should call it an 8-inch tablet because it's really round up.
These smaller iPad, let's say. I honestly think they would not do a smaller iPad unless they legitimately and on their own believe that they could make a great product out of it. They wouldn't do it because they'd make something crummy, but only because some other competitor.
Let me interrupt here. This is one thing that Android does do very well. Because I have a Google account and other Android devices, I can restore from my Google account to this tablet. At this point, it's going to log in and it's going to download all the apps I have already purchased, all the settings and so forth to it, which means that in a few minutes it's going to really be ready to run.
No, but that's something you can do with iOS, right?
I guess you can.
Yeah. Because I've got new iOS devices.
You're right. From the cloud, it downloads the apps. But boy, it sure takes a long time to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that they've got a very, very good solution for this. But I agree with Andy that I don't think that they would be doing an iPad mini because they would fear that they would be losing money from these other things, to quote, and it's cool because Andy's got the picture behind him, to quote Spaceballs, they're doing it for an S load of money because they think they can make it. You know, the iPad mini, and this is the difference. I think that everything, and I've had a little bit of hands-on time with the
Nexus 7. Yeah.
And it's good. It's very, very good. I very much enjoyed my experience with it. But at the same time, Google's not making money on this, right?
Right.
Like, we don't know how much of a bath they're taking on it, but it's either very close to breaking even or they're losing, you know?
Right.
So I don't think that Apple does this if that's the same proposition, because that hasn't been the way they've done it in the past.
But to be fair, there was a cost breakdown on the Kindle Fire when it first came out, and the initial cost breakdown was close to that. They're selling it close to cost, or maybe with about $10 profit for every $200 unit sold. That has since been adjusted, and now analysts believe that they're making about $30 to $40.
Okay,
which
is respectable. That ain't bad.
Which is okay. I think that if Apple, I also agree with you 100% there. They would not sell a miniature iPad at cost. They would try to still make their 25% to 30% margin. I think that if they're affected by these little smaller tablets, it's only because it's a classic turnaround where they're letting They're letting Amazon and Google do their market research for them. They've already sold millions of Kindle Fires, I think that Google will do exceptionally well selling these, and that will at least demonstrate to Apple that there are people who really, really want a 7-inch or 8-inch form factor. That means that we're leaving money on the table by not addressing those people who feel like they're being left out by the iPad. So that's the only way I think that these smaller tablets would affect Apple.
And to your credit, Andy, you have always said that Apple does not do reactive. Apple doesn't look at the competition. It's funny because they're one of the few companies in Silicon Valley that doesn't go, what's Facebook doing? What's Google doing? And so I think you're right. I don't think they're looking at Google and saying, well, they're doing a 7-inch tablet, we better.
Or when they have had those inclinations, they have been their failures. And I think Ping was one of them. Ping was, how do we bake social into
good point.
A thing?
So maybe they did do that with Ping. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I would say about, you know, the iPad mini rumors are, you know, I completely lost my train of thought. I was going to say something really interesting.
Say nothing then.
Yeah, then yes. Evaporated. I thought if I
the
stammered
one thing
long,
I would say.
If I stammered long enough, I could come up with it. Sometimes it comes to you,
and then sometimes you just look like a moron. Not that you look like a moron.
No, I wore a jacket.
try to like master that facial expression that says, "Oh, I just forgot I'm under NDA on something I can't talk about."
I better
look like I lost my train of thought.
I've only been in the Bay Area for like a month and a half, but now I just need to start inventing NDAs
it's
for
all
myself.
About
like,
the
I
NDA,
talked about
baby.
This, and I didn't already know things I can't talk about.
I can't talk about this. Is you know I have played I played I with this a little
a guy
bit.
At Isotope Comics, and he had I thought he had a Nexus 7 on the Comixology app, but it turned I saw the Apple logo on it.
I had played with this a little bit before, and even did a quickie review. But now that I'm getting to look at it a little bit more, the good screen. It's a little dim, but it's a very crisp
IPS screen. Same technology as the iPad. I mean, 220 DPI.
Right, 220 is good.
The only thing in terms of all the motions of the graphics and everything, which is always where I've noticed Android has kind of lagged more than iOS.
Uh-huh.
It's completely caught up except for pinch and zoom, I found.
Yeah, I should be able. Oh, wait a minute. I did.
Pinch and zoom was still just had a little
did
bit.
Did you feel that lag
clang.
Though? Yeah, I thought it wasn't doing it because I did this and it took a while.
Yeah, it's much, much better. It's a Tegra 3 processor quad core, as
very
good as
fast.
You can really get in a device like that.
Yep.
Also, they actually made a big point during the developer conference about talking about one of the features of Android 4.1 was to re-engineer the touch interface so that to get rid of that kind of a lag. I think that they've mostly eliminated it. I don't think they've completely eliminated it. At this point, what I notice more isn't so much that it lags behind so much as this is like a planet with slightly larger mass than planet Earth, where the gravity is just a little bit different. Because when I want to flick and scroll things, I expect a certain speed and a certain like physics that doesn't match here. So I find that it's 97%.
It's what you're used to, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I know what you're laughing at, by the way, Justin. You're laughing at my music.
No, listen. You were
laughing at the
you
fact
you rock the club bangers, Leo. We've always known that about
Kid
you.
Kid Ink, Def Jam, a little Jet Life. Some Tyga,
okay,
50 Cent.
I totally remembered what I was going to say. So if we flash back to when the iPad...
it's
when,
the 50 Cent, isn't it?
Yeah, you know,
yeah, brought it all back.
50 jogs my memory,
yeah,
as he normally does.
Yeah.
When we flash back to when the iPad was announced, and the buzzword was it's a gray area. And critics of the idea, of the concept, before it got in people's hands, was that we have an iPhone, we have a laptop, why do we need this gray area device? And to think now that we are in a very short amount of time in a place where we're all kind of in agreement that a 7-inch tablet to live between your smartphone and your iPad is not a crazy idea that people could want to own, especially
right.
at a $200 price point, to have three kind of touch interface computers is amazing. It just really shows how far we've come as consumers psychologically in thinking about how much we rely on these devices.
Yeah.
Well, because we have so much data now that we rely on that when we have different ways of articulating that data, it's not about the device, it's about the content, it's about the photos, it's about the books we rely on, it's about the music. And we have a different and a unique way to express that and use them in our daily lives. That's a big deal. I also agree with you that a 7-inch, it's hard to think of someone who would necessarily not want a 7-inch tablet. Not that everyone should have it, but even someone who already has an iPad, I can see someone saying that, yes, but it's nice to have like a more portable version of the iPad so that I can something more practical for reading that's more comfortable to hold on to. I travel with the iPad instead of with my MacBook. If it's a heavy work week, I will actually take my iPad 3 and my iPad 2 and have the luscious like two-screen display. This would work even better for that because now I have like an even cheaper, if I didn't already have a second iPad, it would be, well, here's a $200 device that can do really things that the iPad can't do because of its size, and I could still have like that second side in the hotel room, that second screen that's showing me Netflix or my Slingbox or my YouTube content while I'm actually doing work on my primary window on the iPad.
Well, now, here's the thing. This is 16:9. This is movie widescreen, and we don't know, but the rumor is that the Apple will be 1024 by 768. It'll be 4x3 like the other iPad. Which is a better choice for a device this size, long and tall and thin, or square?
You know what? I absolutely admit that I was wrong. When we were talking earlier, like last year, about the idea of, months ago, the first idea of a 16:9, longer and skinnier iPhone came out. I thought, oh man, that seems so awkward. That seems so weird. I think that it's really more like, it's more like I wasn't used to that form factor and it was really difficult for me to just imagine, like, see the movies being displayed that way. Right. Or even, for movies, it's great. It's more like the question of what do you do when you actually just have a web page? What do you do when you have just a document? We're not used to, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not used to seeing, like, legal-sized form factor. But it really was a case of, it's not that this is wrong, it's just that, Andy, you dimwit, you're just not used to it.
So it's all right.
Now I don't see any problem with it. And also, given that most movies are now being formatted for widescreen format, you're losing less information off the screen when you display it that way. So there's actually a practical benefit for it. So, again, I was wrong.
It's good.
Look, we're violating copyright.
Woo! Hey! Shrek interlaced. Yay.
That's brave. Come on, man.
Brave?
Yeah.
How can you be watching Brave?
I know. I think Pixar's going to make versions of that on the Google Play Store that just stutter and stop randomly and like pop up
error
messages.
That's a trailer. It's okay. We can broadcast trailers, can't we?
You want to see movies that I've ripped. Hang on.
You mentioned
Dark Knight Rises, anybody?
You mentioned earlier M.G. Sigler's review in TechCrunch.
Right.
And he is, of course, a virulent...
He would dispute the fact that he's an Apple fanboy, but I think the rest of the world...
I would say he's a virulent explainer of the Apple position.
Thank you.
I think that would be a safe way to put it.
Okay.
And I love his writing, but his point was like he leaves the iPad on the couch and he would take the Google 7 and
that was kind of a revelation to him, was that he would pick this up out of choice. And that's kind of interesting, isn't it? You know, I don't know how I'm going to react on this. I am an Android fanboy. I admit it. I use a Galaxy S3. I still have an iPad and an iPhone, and I love them, and I'll buy the new iPhone. But I was early on the Android bandwagon. I like Android. And so I'm glad to see people who one might think didn't have open minds to something like this saying, yeah, you know what, this isn't that bad. That's a good sign.
Well, and to Andy's point, it's content, and you know the medium is the message. You know, if there's something that you would like to read, if you like to do reading in bed, then
the small size does work.
The small size, you can hold it easier. You don't
see, Andy and I were the only two people in the world who liked the Kindle Fire. We both like
a lot of people like the Kindle Fire, which is actually my other question about.
Well, this is so much better because it's fast.
But here's the thing that Apple and Amazon have, which is retail outlets and relationships with customers that pay money in a way that Google doesn't.
So how does Google get this in front of people?
Yeah, and that's the thing. The Kindle Fire, they blew off the shelves because every time you went to Amazon to buy anything, it was like, by the way, $200, and it kind of looks like an iPad, and it's getting decent reviews. I don't know. Just add it to your cart. What are you?
Right. It's easy.
You know, like, and Apple obviously has these fantastic destinations where you can go. They look amazing. They have commercials that look great. Mm-hmm. They have a relationship with consumers. They have credit cards on hand. Google, that's the one area where Google doesn't have a natural advantage. That people who interact with Google products, except for, I mean, Android users is something that's coming along, but that's relatively new, are by and large have a relationship that is free. You know, even for Android phones, you get your phone as part of your 2-year contract. It's not like you say, well, that thing, that's what I plunked down my hard-earned money for.
So how does Google get this in front of people? Do they sell it at Best Buy, or are they?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to look it up, but yeah, this is being ordered from Staples, Office Depot, GameStop, Sam's Club. I'm not sure if that meant online or in brick and mortar.
Right. So in theory, anyway.
Well, I think it's at Sam's Club and Costco's. But, you know, if you've been to a Sam's Club and Costco's, it will be another new tablet, another new Android tablet.
We were talking about that on
Twitter. There's been a lot of them before, and they've all blown.
That's why Apple has a great advantage by the Apple Store. It's why Microsoft's doing Microsoft stores more and more. Even Sony, Samsung just announced they're going to do stores. There is an advantage to having the exclusivity.
They got a little static, right? Because they look a little too Apple-y.
No, you saw that the judge in England who said that Samsung's not cool enough exactly. to have actually stolen this, so they're off the hook. They don't have the cool factor.
And then the judge danced off like a shadow.
It's very strange. It's a very strange ruling. Yeah.
I'm sorry, clarifying, yes, it is available actually in the retail stores. It's not just like staples.com.
Okay, good. That'll help. I'm sure they worked very hard to make that possible.
But there's also the dimension where so much of what's available on the Google Play Store is not necessarily available internationally.
Right.
So Apple is selling iPads and iPhones in every single country. They can sell content in every single country. They have one hell of a head start over everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why if numbers for this and Andy, from hearing you and hearing other people whose opinions I very much respect, that it looks like this is a big leap forward in terms of especially a tablet, this form factor, and certainly at this price. I would just worry that in the context of how consumers will initially see it, that it will be just another tablet. And I don't know if it's immediately going to catch on.
But that cuts both ways,
I'm watching
ways,
you on TV.
You're listening to that really rambly point yet again because it wasn't long enough the first
time. I'll turn off the audio. That looks pretty good, though. This is one of a number of third-party apps on Android for Twit. This is F-Con. And this is going to get a little weird in a moment.
Oh, you're watching yourself.
How am I? There's Robert. There's just Robert Young. I like this. You know, I think this actually looks pretty good.
No, it looks absolutely great. We'll get some HD movies on, and it just looks brilliant. It's just a wonderful device. Yeah. But what you're saying, it does cut both ways. Something that I've been sort of curious to find out is, do people love the iPad, or do they just love the idea of a tablet computer that works great? Because so far they haven't really had the opportunity to make that choice. So what happened? I think it'll be fascinating when if and when Apple comes out with a smaller sized iPad Mini, and the Google the Nexus 7 is widely available, and maybe a third party will come out with a good $200 or $220 tablet. When people have the choice of simply choosing whatever they want to choose in that form factor, will they necessarily gravitate towards the iPad because it's fundamentally better, or will they buy the Nexus 7 because there's an Office Max where they buy rubber bands two times a month, and they saw one, and they had an extra $200, they came home with one, and they're as happy with it as they would have been with an iPad. I don't know the answer to that, and I'm really keen to find out what it
is. I think there's a massive market for a $200,
$250
tablet.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's going to really propel this forward. And Apple, we don't know what the price is.
No.
I'm very surprised if they come down to that level, but maybe they will. And at that point, Apple wins, don't you think?
I mean,
you have a choice between a 7-inch iPad for $250 or a 7-inch Android, you're going to go with the iPad, right?
I would, because I have spent a lot of time with both devices, and I think that I could talk anybody's ear off on the differences between the two, and I can really define what I want. But I come back to my waitress at the diner. They're not necessarily – or waitress at the diner who simply said, I like the form factor. I like the price. It works great. I'm of the 5 minutes I've spent with it in my hands, it seems to work very, very nice. So that's I'd be willing to buy one if I had an extra $200. I also keep coming back to the example of how I react to cars. I mean, in another podcast, I talked about my love for the Crown Victoria. Which I think is just a cool looking car.
Spent a lot of time in the back seat of this.
I was going to say.
Exactly.
Get off this.
I don't know why. Do they all have the metal grid in between the front and the back seat?
I think it's standard. Yeah.
Okay. Just check.
Anyone I want to buy. Well, they make the police version of it. They make the limousine version of it. I just love the styling of it, of this car that is designed not to attract attention, but the fact that it's designed not to attract attention means that it's the focus of every car on the highway. that's too unhip a car not to be a Smokey. and people say, oh my God, well, look, here are eight cars that you should buy instead of a Crown Victoria. It's just, oh, they're terrible. And the thing is, and they're all right. They're all right about, I'm sure, about the handling of cars, about the power of the engine, about the service, about all the sort of stuff like that. But I'm the sort of car buyer who, if I saw a used Crown Vic in good condition at the price that I wanted to pay for a car like that, I'd drive off the lot with it, and I'd be very, very happy with it, and I'd put another 80,000 miles on it before it would fall apart like the Bluesmobile in the middle of Chicago. And I would be blissfully ignorant of the fact that I bought an inferior car. And I always come back to
wait,
that
wait, 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 wait. Never... Did you say the Bluesmobile?
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
This episode's definitely getting pulled.
I know it's a bad idea to buy like a secondhand cop car or a secondhand taxi, but every time like I subscribe to the government auction sites, and every time I see like a used Crown Vic that looks good, all I can think of is Elwood talking to Jake. It's got a cop motor. It's got a cop shock, cop suspension. It was built before catalytic converters to run good on regular gas. I'm like, I want a cop engine. I want a cop suspension.
We're going to take a break. Andy Inoko, Justin Robert Young, and Leo Laporte talking about anything we damn well want to talk
about.
Yeah,
make something of it.
they will, believe me. And he's wearing sunglasses. But first, you know what? I was thinking if you were in the market for a new tablet.
Sure.
You might want to disabuse yourself of the old tablet. Now, you could just throw it in the closet and add it to that great big pile of gadgets there already. Or you could go to Gazelle.com and keep it moving. Gazelle is the easy way to recycle that gadget and get cash. Visit Gazelle.com and take a look. They made it very simple. You know, it's just a drop down. Select the product you want to get rid of. Oh, that iPad, huh? Get an offer. Press the button. Now, this offer is good for 30 days, so you don't have to sell it right away. You can sit on it. You could think about it. I've got the 32 gig Wi-Fi plus 3G, and it's on AT&T. The condition is, wow, $320?
Yeah.
Yow.
Yeah, buddy.
That's going to not only get me the Nexus 7, but also a few apps to go along with it. Now, here's your choice. You can get a check. You can PayPal it, or for an additional 5%, which, if I'm not mistaken, is another $16. Mm-hmm. I can use an Amazon gift card on here.
Which might be where you buy it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever you want to buy.
Right. You know, that's a pretty good deal. Now, they pay the postage on anything worth more than a dollar. They take care of it. They take the data off of it. So, you know, you might still want to do that. But if it's too much trouble or you forgot to, don't worry. The engineers at Gazelle are great about taking stuff off. You get fast payment, fair prices, free shipping. It is the best way to disabuse yourself of old gadgets and get yourself a little cash for purchasing that new gadget. GAZELLE.com. Lock in that quote for 30 days. But I got to tell you, do it today, because I can tell you something I know for sure. Tomorrow, it's worth less, all the way. No gadget has ever gone up in value. Maybe in 100 years when it's an antique, do you want to wait that long? No.
Well, here's what you do is you have...
You put it in a time capsule.
Exactly. Well, you shrink wrap it,
keep it in a freezer.
A mile under the earth.
Yeah. In a salt mine.
Exactly. Yeah. Like they do old film footage.
And then cross your fingers that it might be worth something in 100 years.
Well, you know, we're coming up now. It's getting closer and closer to when we're going to start hearing, you know, firm dates on when things like, you know, big announcement that's probably going to be the iPad mini.
Right.
Or iPhone.
That's when the price goes down.
Yeah.
Do it now.
So
do it now.
Lock it in now.
Yeah.
Lock it in now.
Yeah, you could lock it in for 30 days and you're still
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
They have paid almost $50 million to 300,000 customers. This is a good company doing a great service with a great product. I want you to try it. And if they ask you, just tell them you heard it on MacBreak Weekly. I don't think they ask you. But if they
just
did.
Yell at them.
Yell
just,
it. Hey, you
just
know where
yell
I...
yell at your
you
screen.
Know, you know how I... Tweet it.
MacBreak!
You know what? This would... It would do me a favor. Tweet it. If you sell something at Gazelle, tweet what you sold it for and what your experience has been at Gazelle. And just mention you heard it. And
say,
you know, use
I
the
made
hashtag
that fat cash Weekly. Listening to MacBreak
That's
Weekly.
It. That's all I want. That's all I ask.
Bling, bling.
Gazelle.com. So... Google is paying a fine of $22.5 million because of hacking your Safari on iOS, which is chicken feed, but I got to point out the largest fine the FTC has ever given a private company.
Wow.
$22.5 million. That was that thing where they bypassed the block third-party cookies on iPhone in order to make the Google Plus button work, the Plus One button work. And now, you know, they have Chrome, which I have to say looks, I like it on iOS, but it can never be the default browser because Apple doesn't play that way. So they've got code, Google's putting out code on how you do an app on iPhone or iPad that checks to see if Chrome's there and will launch links in Chrome if it is.
So this is for developers. Like if you,
yeah,
if
you can't do anything about
app,
this.
Then you can put it in. And so this, I think, is similar, unless I'm confusing things, that like in, like I have Tweetbot.
Tweetbot. Know?
So when you
this.
Click a link in Tweetbot,
it could launch it Chrome.
It doesn't send you to Safari, it sends it to their internal browser. So you're staying inside their app. And you can
if,
launch it from if
in
Safari
Tweetbot,
from there.
Yeah, if in Tweetbot you say view on the web, it will then launch Safari. But Tweetbot or any other developer could put code in that says, check if they have Chrome. And the reasonable presumption, if somebody has Chrome, they actually want you to open stuff in Chrome, right?
Yes.
Or no?
I mean, maybe. I have Opera on my phone. Doesn't mean I'll use Opera.
Yeah, I don't really want Opera to open.
You know? I would be kind of annoyed if there was one app I had that was just really super Opera fanboys that were like, well, you really should be using it,
you know,
because it's got a lot of extra features.
That's a good point.
Alex Book, my new sponsor, Opera.
Oh, oh no!
Justin, you're fun to have around. What's
I know.
he's a good sidekick.
Exactly.
He's kind of meant to be a sidekick. Is that why you're wearing a jacket?
Sure. I'm going to tap dance a little bit later.
Second Banana.
That's me.
That's
that was
him.
Actually my middle name.
Second Banana?
Yeah,
Justin Second Banana
Puerto
Young. No, we love having you on. Justin moved to the Bay Area recently. That's why we're fortunate. We can get a lot more of you.
Yeah. So I'm doing NSFW live here.
I love that. Thank you.
And I've been doing TNT. And
you know that Brian Brushwood's soon going to become the Second Banana because you're here.
I know he's on the screen.
Where's he in freaking
old
Austin?
Second Banana Brushwood. Didn't,
yeah. So there. So actually, that's a very good point, Justin. That somebody just because they have a browser doesn't mean they want it to be the default browser.
I mean, there's a reason, you know, if the content of your app, you know, particularly works well in Chrome or runs faster or for some reason is
I would like
that
it.
Experience.
I would love it to be the default browser, but you can't change that on iOS.
Or you want to do this incredibly radical thing on an iOS device, which is let the user make a decision about what he or she
there
likes.
There you go.
I mean, that's crazy.
You mean like have a preference?
Exactly. Just
like on the desktop, have a preference?
I should have drunk all that cough syrup just before sitting down.
Andy, I don't know, Andy. You're gonna become an apostate here on the Mac Break Weekly Show.
No, I just had my checkup. My doctor did that horrible thing.
Got a good
apostate?
My apostate
is fine.
Can I ask you guys? So this Marissa Mayer thing.
Oh, we haven't mentioned that.
Right?
We should mention that.
It's massive.
It's not a Mac story, but it's an interesting story.
Well, here's how I was
Marissa,
thinking about
just
it.
For those of you who are going, what Marissa Mayer story? She, of course, is the 20th hire at Google and a very, very well-known Google engineer for a long time. Ran search, was the person in charge of the design of the Google search page, and was widely praised for keeping it simple, keeping it elegant. Recently kind of side-loaded over to location, which is still very important. I think, though, I have to say she was not made part of the operating group at Google, which is the group with all of the power. And I'm kind of not surprised that a few months later, she's taken the job of running Yahoo. She's the new CEO at Yahoo. Kind of a shock. Was not mentioned in any of the lists of potential CEOs. In fact, remember, there were two candidates, the current interim CEO and the CEO at Hulu, who very quickly said, no, I don't want to run Yahoo. And so we all thought Levinson would keep the job, but now out of nowhere, Marissa Mayer. Kind of a surprise. So go ahead. There's the backstory.
Yeah. So let me ask you guys this. Obviously, with iOS 6, they're taking a gigantic step forward to get away from Google services with Maps. Now you have somebody who can kind of bring, let's say theoretically, Marissa Mayer can, to some extent, at least on mobile, kind of right the ship a little bit.
Wouldn't that be interesting? If she makes some deals
that now, if for Apple, does Yahoo now represent a more interesting partner for mobile services?
Well, you know that Yahoo, which was suing Facebook of patent lawsuits over social, has gotten in bed with Facebook.
Yeah. Well, so, that's like their thing now, is they're kind of like they moonlight as patent trolls.
But the suit's dropped and now they're best buddies. I think Facebook, that's an interesting nexus. Yeah. It's the anti-Google nexus, Facebook, Yahoo, Apple.
That's a really great observation, because every time you look at stats on where is all the web traffic going, a huge and disproportionate amount of it is going to iOS devices.
Yeah.
So if Yahoo said, at least while we rebuild, we're going to make ourselves at the heart of every transaction that every iOS device does, that immediately relegates it from that shop at the mini mall that got driven out of business when Walmart opened up across the other end of town to a very, 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 to something like a Target store. Where maybe not number one, but oh man, does it have presence.
That's from Al Sunglass Hunt to Target.
Well, look at this. This is Sheryl Sandberg, COO at Facebook and one of the most prominent women in Silicon Valley. Congratulations to Marissa Mayer, she writes on her Facebook page. Great news for women and men.
And men across too.
You guys okay. It's good news for you too across Silicon Valley. All of us at Facebook look forward to working with you in your new role. We also want to thank Ross Levinson, the interim CEO, for his leadership in reestablishing blah, blah, blah. But I think that, do you think that would be a good move on Apple to say, hey, we got Facebook, we got Twitter, we don't like Google. What about Yahoo?
Yeah, we'll use Yahoo for search. We'll use Yahoo for maps. We will use Flickr as one of our if a user wants to expose their iCloud-based photos to the public, we will use Flickr as our transport for that. That could be pretty big. And also the fact that...
Now, remember, Yahoo search is not Yahoo. It's Bing.
I'm sorry. But even that...
Even better.
Apple is not necessarily... we get back to institutional concepts. They are institutionally haters of Google.
Right.
I don't think they would do something to cut... They would cut off their own nose to spite their face. I don't think they hate them that much. They are business with a good head on their shoulders. But if they're putting up that list of pros and cons to working with Yahoo, saying, well, if we help both Yahoo and Microsoft, that puts Google in a much, much worse position. Anything that we can do to make sure that Google Plus does not become Twitter, anything we can do to make sure that YouTube does that another video service becomes as relevant for personal videos as YouTube is, that would at least get you a second meeting, I think.
Very interesting. And they have to, if they do that, they have to at the bottom put a Justin Robert Young joint.
I'm just saying. Who's the second banana now, Leo?
Who's the monkey with the gun now?
Exactly. I'm the monkey with the gun. I'm putting together an idea.
I didn't want to interrupt you. You have been at minimum the number one plantain in this. You never pick one up, and then you try one and said, hey, you know, maybe I should buy these more regularly.
Maybe. I don't know.
It worked out.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the in-app purchasing flaw that Apple just can't seem to shut down. Apple reverses its decision on EPEAT. And some hints about when we might see Mountain Lion this month. All coming up as we continue Mac Break Weekly. Justin Robert Young from NSFW is here. Andy Anaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. This portion of the show brought to you by our friends at Carbonite.com. I talk about them a lot, and I really... hope that this is sinking in. But I know it's not, because I still get calls all the time on the radio show from people who say, oh, just the other day, I brought my computer in to be fixed, and when it came back, my data was gone. The guy made a backup, but all I have is this one archive.pst file. Is that everything? No, it's his old email on Outlook. See, if you'd had Carbonite, you wouldn't be worrying about this. Carbonite is exactly what you need for backup. It's got three things that every backup should have. One, automatic, so you don't have to remember to back up. It's just always doing it continuously in the background. So you make a change, that's two, automatic, continuous. You make a change to a file, it's automatically backed up whenever you're online. And, you know, because it uses SSL, 128-bit encryption, even if you're at an open access spot at a coffee shop or on the road on a hotel, it's using that internet, but it's safe. It's secure. It's encrypted on the way to the Carbonite servers. And if you would like to add Trust No One encryption, you can. Only you have the password. Only you have the key. Carbonite doesn't have access to your data. And I really like that feature for people who really want privacy or need it to be compliant with, you know, HIPAA and other standards. The third thing, and I think this is so important, it's off-site. It's not a backup sitting next to your computer. Good idea to have a backup sitting next to your computer, your near-line backup. But you should always have an off-site backup. And ask Padre, SJ, he'll tell you. Every IT guy knows this because if the worst happens, if there's a fire, a flood, an earthquake, if the building falls over, if somebody breaks in and steals everything, your backups are always safe. That's so important. And I got to tell you, at $59 a year for everything on your internal drive and everything on a single computer, they also have plans for external drives and multiple computers. But the starting price, $59 per year per computer, is amazing. Less than $5 a month for everything. I want you to try it free, 15 days free, no credit card needed, just Carbonite.com and the offer code MacBreak. If you decide to buy, make sure you'd use the code MacBreak when you try it, because if you decide to buy, once you've used that offer code, you'll get 14 months for the price of 12. Two months free. Carbonite.com. Offer code MACBREAK. MacBreak. And we thank them so much for the support of MacBreak Weekly. So it's a little bit of a cat and mouse game. Apple has blocked or is trying to block the in-app purchasing flaw. I didn't know about this, and I would never. By the way, it seems to me unethical and rude in the extreme. But a Russian hacker, Alexei Borodin, has discovered a flaw in iOS in-app purchasing that allows iOS device owners, iPad and iPhone owners, to download free in-game content, authenticating through this server. Now, he was running this server in Russia. He's moved it. Apple brought it down, has asked the ISP to bring it down, but now he's moved it offshore where he says it cannot be accessed.
You bring Apple, down server, I move server.
I move server. You know you can't get me. I am now in...
So don't worry, anybody. This is all completely above board.
Well, then that's the other thing. I got to point out, if you are using this server... Now, he says, no, wait. You don't log out of iTunes account, so I don't have credentials. Then use server.
And then log back in again so I can capture password.
Yeah. I mean, it's not only immoral, unethical, and stealing. You might get ripped off by doing it. I just got to point this out. Apple has...
It is highly likely you are getting ripped off.
I'm not going to say this. This guy published a method. He published it first. It said, if you're using iOS 3 or later, you can, quote, purchase any kind of in-app content for free without hacking the device. It cannot be prevented by developers using Apple's recommended receipt signing procedures. He discovered it, and then he created an online service, in-appstore.com. He's already processed more than 30,000 individual in-app payment requests. Apple has been pulling down YouTube videos showing how to use it. They have been very aggressive about trying to track this guy down. This is a quote that they gave the Next Web, the Loop column. The security of the App Store is incredibly important to us and the developer community. Apple representative Natalie Harrison said, we take reports of fraudulent activity very seriously and we are investigating. They blocked the original server. Then he migrated it to a new server. Apple was able to pressure the host of the original server in Russia into dropping Borodin. But now the new server is on an offshore country. And he says, the new service has been updated. Completely cuts out Apple servers, improving protocol to include its own authorization and transaction process. New method.
The new feature also gives your dog incredibly explosive gas pain.
Moose and squirrel.
That URL again. Have your credit number standing by. Dissidents are waiting to take your order.
It's been adapted to ensure users cannot use our service without first logging out of iTunes. Anyway, don't
worry, folks. Totally safe.
Well, I mean, so what Borodin says is it's up to Apple to adapt its APIs or place new blocks on service. He says Apple has to fix this. I'm just pointing out a security flaw. He's apparently not. He's not asking for money.
Well,
he's still got to wear a pair of pants that is especially cut for his unique anatomy. Let's
yes.
Put that.
Oh no, definitely. Because I think
I have.
Will those tactical pants accommodate massive cojones?
I think he's got utila kilt grade.
Yeah.
ones no, down there.
Because everything that he says is that, oh, we are complying. We moved the server so that he's no longer being closed. Why are you complaining?
What was your problem?
If this is a problem, fix the problem. Until then, why you give me credit?
Yes, what is problem here?
I totally think that right after this goes on, that he gets a phone call from Tim Cook. That's the Liam Neeson call from Taken. Like,
that was a great call.
Listen to me carefully.
Yeah. I have a very special set of skills.
You shut down your server.
Now, if this were NSFW, if this were NSFW, I would play that.
That's no, that's
hidden curse in the public domain.
No, I'm sure, yeah, it's public domain. Sure. no problem. What could go wrong? You know how often NSFW is taken down?
We're not taking down all
constantly.
Often. Why?
I get the emails. You don't get the emails.
We get taken
most
down?
Most of the time. Well, I take it back. Most of the time they say, well, 800 companies in Hollywood have asserted rights to some of the things on NSFW, but we're not going to take it down for now.
Okay.
I get that.
We have to have a billion.
I ignore it.
You can buy the ballerina footage that we aired,
you may have ads on there that
the
I don't.
Price is right.
Yeah, that I don't get any money for. But other than that, it's all. Every time.
Really?
Almost every show.
I wonder if it's just something that we play all the time.
Anytime you play a clip, they want to do a takedown.
Oh, it's probably because we play a lot of
clips.
Yeah, like viral videos and stuff. Yeah. What was that? Oh, that copyrighted content that we constantly play without any hesitation? Oh, okay. That's tough.
You and frame rate. And you know, then
the common denominator is not me.
This is frame rate and NSFW. Yeah, well, who's the guy who's on both of those shows? This is how good a boss I am. Have I ever complained? Have I ever said anything to you or Schwood? No.
There was that one time. The one time that we got, and it was very within rights because we could have been sued.
Don't stay away from libel, slander, that kind of thing. But as far as the Hollywood goes, do whatever you want.
Yeah. No, we go buck wild bananas. It's a hilarious time.
Okay, where were we?
I have no idea.
Liam Neeson, Taken, Russian hacker.
Oh, the Russian hacker. There we go. I mean, I'll say very seriously, I think that for Apple to bring all these in-app purchases and make such a big deal about taking their own cut and establishing this as a standard, that's what they're paying for. That's what,
lock it down.
Yeah, that's what people are paying for when they give that cut there, is that security. That's the protection money, you know, for the big bad Apple to come down on people like this. So,
it is incumbent
on
them.
Holy fire.
If there's 30,000 people, 30,000 apps, in-app purchases that aren't going to the developers or Apple, but aren't going to developers, then Apple needs to do something about it besides chasing Borden around.
That's a lot of war eagles from Angry Birds that aren't getting paid for.
Yeah.
Also shows to the layperson exactly how impressive like a DNS attack can be.
Right.
That the whole reason why this whole works is that you install like a new certificate that says that any time that any app on your Mac needs to resolve a URL, don't go through the normal way. Use this special server that's been trained to say that this server over here is actually Apple's iTunes store server, and that's how it manages to intercept what the iTunes store is doing. And so that anytime there's a piece of malware that can do that same trick, you could think you're going to Google, you could think you're going to Amazon, but you're actually going to invisibly another site.
Right.
So this is going to come up in the future, I think.
Couple of
install the certificate. It will give you free magic berries for your
No problem. Apple's apparently, according to 9to5Mac, Apple stores are having overnights. This is what you suspected, and we suspected July 24th. Their quarterly earnings call is July 24th. And the last quarterly earnings call, they said, oh, and by the way, he'll be able to get Lion tomorrow. And so the thinking was maybe this time they would do it again. And yeah, true enough, according to whispers, according to 9to5Mac, Apple stores in the U.S. and overseas are planning overnights for Tuesday, July 24th. Seems like that means a launch of Mountain Lion on the 25th.
Now, how crazy, because, I mean, I've been listening to, let's say, this specific podcast for a very long time, and in the earlier days when I was listening to it, the idea of an overnight for an OS release would seem
good point, crazy especially pants. Since you can't buy this OS release, you have to go to the App Store and download it. What do they need to stay open for?
Well, because they still have a lot of machines they have to upgrade.
Oh,
there might be training involved. There's almost certainly going to be signage involved.
Of course.
So It's probably something. I there was a time when I'd be excited. Oh, look, they wouldn't be shutting down the entire store. They wouldn't be keeping fifth. Like, no, I've since talked to like people who like manage stores saying you wouldn't believe that. Even when there's a note saying, hi, we decided that we want the 16 gigabyte iPads to be to the left of the 64 gigabyte iPads instead of to the right. That's like, oh, man, who's going to have to pull overtime to make that happen? So,
yeah, no, that's a very good point. In fact, 9to5 even points out that this is not unusual to have Tuesday overnight. So. But given the fact they said it was going to ship in July.
Maybe they're having a slumber party where they do each other's hair, talk about boys.
By the way, it's like an old church lock-in, right?
We are planning a Twit slumber party, by the way. Stay tuned for details.
Is that a serious thing?
I want to have a slumber party here.
Like, what's going to happen?
Well, I was thinking of doing it on the 24th.
Why does the feather stiff as a boy?
Oddly enough, the 24th is the anniversary, the one-year anniversary of moving into this studio.
Yeah,
but if Apple's going to have an overnight the same night, then all the cool kids will be going to Apple's.
Yeah, we'll do a potluck.
Every like regular like host and guest brings a covered dish.
Okay,
I think we should live stream it. We should all like ring the bell like one of those old TV specials, and it's like, oh, it's NSFW's Justin Robert Young, and I'll bring a casserole.
Or I could just get a stick and go.
Why it's anywhere near?
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
Justin Robert Young.
And escort.
You do have to have three names to get in there.
Sure.
Apple has reversed its course on EPEAT. A letter from Bob Mansfield, outgoing SVP of hardware, says, we made a mistake pulling out of the recycling program that Apple and other consumer electronics companies had put together with the EPA. Apple takes a comprehensive approach to measuring our environmental impact, and all of our products meet the strictest energy efficiency standards. We're not talking about Energy Star here. We're talking about recyclability. They also say we lead the industry by reporting each product's greenhouse gas emissions. Apple products are superior in other important environmental areas not measured by EPEAT. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about recyclability. So after hearing perhaps that City of San Francisco would be no longer buying Apple products because they aren't EPEAT certified, the United States government, Ford Motor Company, a lot of big companies. Mansfield writes the letter saying, we recently heard from many loyal Apple customers who were disappointed to learn we had removed our products from the EPEAT rating system. I realize this was a mistake. Starting today, all eligible, and I underscore eligible here, Apple products are back on EPEAT. The iPhone has never been EPEAT, nor has the iPad. Unknown what that means. Some have said that the Retina display is EPEAT certified now. I'm not sure.
Mm. Well, Noah, how many times has that word not ascribed to another company appeared on Apple
mistake?
Letterhead? Mistake?
The word mistake? I've never heard Apple say that, ever. Even with AntennaGate, Apple never admitted wrongdoing.
We've heard the word hobby.
Yes. Hobby.
The Apple TV wasn't a mistake. It was a hobby.
Yes. Although I love my Apple TV. I live on my Apple
TV. It was a police action, not a war.
there's a bit of a history. I mean, didn't they have a spat with Greenpeace a while ago?
Greenpeace has been targeting them for a long time.
And they came back fairly, and made good with them, though.
Yeah, and I don't think fairly. I think that Greenpeace just realized this is a big, big company and with a lot of left-wing supporters, so we can go after them more easily than Lenovo.
Also, if you go after Apple, you'll get a lot more results than if you go after Dell, for instance, because who cares about Dell?
Right.
But I think I wonder if this means that when they use the word mistake, maybe internally they mean it was a mistake to drop out of the program instead of just lobbying violently internally with the committee to change how they define the certification for these devices.
Right. Because I don't see them changing the way they make the devices.
Yeah, because that is a design thing. As much as I love the planet, and as a person without kids, I really could care what happens 20 years after I die. in all seriousness, even there, I'm like, if you mean that that everything has to be made out of like nothing can be made as a nice tight glued sandwich. It has to be done with screws. You have to be able to separate every component from every other component. And I just took a look at the specs a couple of days ago. I gave it a very cursory look, so I could be completely wrong. But a lot of it really is it was the disassemblability of some of these products that was causing the violation. It wasn't as though that they were painting the logo on with mercury. Right. It was things that were kind of more subtle than that. Right. So I wonder if they're going to have something that simply says quietly with the committee that here is how we don't believe that our manufacturing process creates a problem. Would it be possible to amend the certification that says that so long as there is in-store recycling so that we will take back this offending product and we will pay the money to have this disassembled correctly and recycled, will you then allow us to have that certification? I really think that's how this is going to end.
Well, this has all the hallmarks of an internal argument between EPEAT and Apple that ended in Apple saying, well, whatever, you know, or EPEAT saying, well, then you're not EPEAT certified anymore. And it went public and then was immediately kind of corrected. Because I totally agree with Andy. I think that Apple would much rather have a conversation with them about how they are even better than their standards and have EPEAT agree to it.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have picks of the week from Justin, Andy, and myself. I should mention that the folks who do Angry Birds have a new iOS game called Amazing Alex that might be worth getting. I don't think Alex Lindsay is a part of it, but we'll find out.
That was a reboot of Alex, the Alex trilogy by Sam Raimi earlier in the decade. I'm joking. Amazing Spider-Man. I'm sorry.
Clockwork Orange, the video game.
Yes.
Come along, little droogies. Would you like more droogies?
That I would buy.
First, though, new cricket bat, you seem to have blood all over this one.
A word from audible.com. You know, I should check and see if Clockwork Orange is on Audible. I bet it is. That is the most amazing twist in the novel. Kind of in the second or third chapter. It's kind of amazing. Yeah, A Clockwork Orange, Anthony Burgess, narrated by Tom Hollander. There's also a dramatization. See, Audible's great. You know, I love Audible. Over 100,000 books in audio. Let me just, this is risky, but I'm going to play a little clip of A Clockwork Orange here. I like to see the movies, but I always will listen to the book before I go to the movie, because the books, when they're read it like this by great actors, are really a movie in your head. I can't get this to play. I'm not sure. Something wrong. Probably don't have something installed. You could play it, though. Go to audible.com. Browse around. Take a look at the books and pick something, because I'm going to show you how you can get a book for free. Andy, what are you listening to this week?
Actually, funny you should mention books based on movies. I saw the movie The Big Year, with Steve Martin and Owen Wilson and Jack Black, just hit cable TV. So you get only 9 opportunities a day to see it. So saw it for the first time. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie. Moved from there to I wondered how birders actually thought about the movie. So I'm reading birders' blogs and saying, wow, they actually treated us with respect and dignity. They got so many details right. And if they got a few things wrong, it was for the story. This is a great movie. It represents us well. And then made me think, well, I want to read the book that this was based on. It was based on The Big Year is when birders decide to spend an entire year of their lives trying to spot as many birds as they possibly can in the United States. And there are records kept about who spot the most birds in the year. So the book actually follows 3 different birders. It tracks very loosely with the movie, but it tracks 3 very, very different kinds of birders as they undertake a big year in the same year. You know how much I love audiobooks to begin with. I could have bought the Kindle. I decided to get the audiobook because the reader was just had so much of a birder sort of voice about him. It passed my highest test, where not only do I sort of circle around in the car to listen to a little bit more of it, when I got inside the house, I still had my phone, I had my earphones plugged in, and I was walking around doing housework and listening to the rest of that chapter.
Wow.
It's not fiction. It's nonfiction, but he does such a good job. He's one of those great nonfiction writers. It's called The Big Year, A Tale of Man, Nature, and Foul Obsession by Mark Obmasik. Obmasik. I'm not getting that right. I've only pronounced my the only hard name I can do is my own last name.
It's Obama with a chick at the end.
See, how your brain trips you up. Oh, Obama. I know how. No, it's not Obama. Obama. Look, I'm telling you, don't try to pronounce it like Obama, but it is Obama. It's not Obama.
It's Obmasik.
Just listen to me for once.
Obmasik.
But he's a great author in that he really takes real-world people and turns them into colorful characters by getting in every single detail of what their day is like, what their priorities are like. You have one person who is, you would imagine, the archetype you picture in your mind of the obsessed birder who just is always about getting the next one, getting the next sighting, getting the next sighting. You have this other person who's had the secret obsession all his life, but he's been busy with business and working up through a company, and only now that he's retired can he finally outlive his passion, which is to spend lots of time in Colorado looking for birds. And this third guy, who is the younger guy, the Jack Black character, as it turns out, who's a younger guy, recently divorced, kind of at a crossroads, and he needs a new project to sort of focus on to take his mind off the fact that he's recently divorced and he doesn't know what he's going to be doing for the next 5 years or so. And again, these are real life characters, but the way that he portrays these, you would think that they're fiction. And so I'm really enjoying this a lot. I think I'm only on chapter like three or four of it. I'm like hour number two of what I think is like a 7 or 8 hour book. But another very strong recommendation.
All you got to do is go to audible.com and sign up for the gold account. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you get your first month free. That means your first credit's free. And you can pick any book, and it's yours to keep. Cancel it anytime. Pay nothing, but keep that book forever. You were saying you had something you
Yeah, I am an Audible subscriber from getting the code, from being a MacBreak
good man.
Listener.
Good man.
And the series that I am now in the middle of is they have redone their new audiobooks for the Admiral Thrawn trilogy of Star Wars. Now, this is
they remastered them just like they screwed up the original.
Did
movie.
They take Jar Jar no! out? Come Bastards. On.
Someone told George Lucas, you know how easy it is to do cut, copy, and paste? It's much easier than digital technology.
So basically, I guess previously, and I know on Audible, they only had abridged versions that were read by Anthony Daniels.
Well, that's kind of cool.
C-3PO.
Yeah.
However, these are done by Mark Thompson, who does a fantastic job. These are all the original characters from the original trilogy. So you have Luke, Leia, Han Solo, and then a bunch of other different new characters that kind of come into this particular story, including Grand Admiral Thrawn, who the story kind of revolves around. But Mark Thompson is a fantastic narrator, and I've only listened to the first one. I'm actually downloading because my credits just renewed today. The second volume, which just came out in 2012, but they also have all these sound effects. And normally, I'm not a huge sound effect and audiobook guy. Like, I kind of just like the reading itself.
Here's a little bit of it. This is Mark Thompson. Shell
to serve as a bridge officer aboard a ship like the Chimera.
Oh, yeah, you hear the ship in the background.
Yeah.
Now, he looked down at the equally young man at the engineering monitor.
That's nice.
Now, in contrast,
it's good when it's the lightsaber sound.
The Chimera had virtually no one aboard except young men.
It's not distracting. It's kind of just makes you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
I like that.
And, you know, for Chewbacca, for R2-D2, instead of it just saying R2-D2 chirped, you
right.
hear R2-D2.
Right.
Lightsabers. I mean, it's fantastic. So if you like Star Wars, it's awesome.
And it's a trilogy, so there's three of them, but get the first one free. Audible.com/MacBreak. Plays back on all your iOS devices, on your laptops, your desktops, Android devices. There's even an Audible app now for Windows Phone. Looks great. Works great. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support. Let's start with our picks of the week. Andy, your camera sling.
Yeah, this is something I've been really hoping for a long, long time. It's called the Sun Sniper. They have three different models, and I've forgotten what it's called. Man, press release here. Oh, it's called the Sun Sniper Strap Surfer. Those of you
dangerous.
Exactly. Well, in the past few years, that a lot of companies have come out with camera slings, where instead of wearing a camera around your neck through a strap, it's actually an over-the-shoulder sling, and the thing like rides on a bearing, so you can slide it up when you need it, then just let it dangle by your hip when you're not using it. However, I almost always am wearing, when I'm walking around, some sort of a bag like this, especially like when I'm in a city. So I have one of those slings that works great, but I have to make sure that I have the stack order correctly. So I have to make sure I have the bag on and then the sling. And then when I sit down for lunch, I have to make sure I take it off correctly. This company has made this beautiful sling that actually integrates into whatever bag you already have. So this is what the component is, and so you have this free floating thing that goes into the tripod mount of your camera, and then it has this really cool little catch right here that the strap of your bag goes through. And it comes apart very simply when you actually want it to come apart. And it's actually held together by two magnets like this. And as you can see, people who are listening on podcasts, it's actually two halves that snap apart. And it turns into sort of like this Z-shaped thing when it's taken apart. There's one that's sort of, well, the hook is one way, the other part, the hook is the other way. But when you click these back together magnetically around the strap, now there's actually no way that your camera can escape. And this is, you'll find out in a second why I'm explaining how well made this thing is. This is all steel. It's all metal. It will not come apart. And yet it's really easy to take on and take off when you want it to. The bearing over here is also all machined metal, has a thick rubber grommet. You really dog it down tight so that you flatten and squeeze this. It's not going to come loose from that end of the camera. They even thought about, they made the strap part of it adjustable so that, you know, sometimes you've got like an SLR, so you need to actually lift it up to eye height, so then you can adjust this long so that you can actually lift it up to your eye. Maybe though you're using like the LCD viewfinder, you don't have to lift it up quite so high, so you can adjust it that way. And knowing that you might be walking around with this thing, this expensive camera, be it a $500 compact system or a $2,000 SLR, you know, in a tourist area, they actually made sure that this strap, there's a little bump here that you might be able to see. It's actually reinforced with steel so that someone can't just simply cut through the strap and walk off with your $2,000 camera. This is all by way of explaining that this simple thing costs $100.
Wow.
It's $100. But if you're going to
that seems a lot.
it's made as well as you could possibly make a device like this. And also, if you were going to, I'm sure that there's a way to make this so that it only costs $30 or $40, where you decide, well, what if the tripod end of it wasn't so secure? What if this would only attach and detach by installing a bunch of screws and would be impossible to take off easily, or would fall off too easily, or what if you made this not adjustable? So I think that there are going to be someone like me who travels a lot and is always wearing a sling, be it whether it's a little bag for my iPad or a 15-inch laptop bag, that I've always wanted something like this so I could adapt that into a sling. That's your initial response, but maybe a month or two later you realize that I would be willing to pay $45 for it, and now this guy who I thought would never pay me back for the dinner that he owes me actually gave me $60. On that basis, I'm now willing to buy this because it is exactly the perfect thing. I acknowledge it's expensive, but nonetheless, I've been using this I actually took it out to my first actual walk-around event, walking around the city taking pictures the other weekend, and man, does it work nicely. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. So very pricey. You can get it from B&H Photo for like $96, I've not seen anything quite like it else on the market.
SunSniperUSA.com if you want to find out more.
Strap Surfer. They really need to work on that name.
Sure.
Messenger bag not included.
They also again, here's a lesson to you. If you're going to send a press release, the price, a very good thing to put on the press release.
Oh, look at that.
Don't make me go surfing and looking for it. Or maybe they're quick to point out that it comes with $500 in theft insurance.
That's cool.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Here it is. Yeah, $96. It was just buried underneath.
There you go.
Fold
it. Maybe my brain just sort of like blocked it out. It's like $96. That's more than I don't own a suit that costs $96.
Mr. Justin Robert Young, you have a pick, I understand.
I do. Okay, so this one has been around for a while, but especially because not only am I new to the Bay Area, but also I've been doing a lot of traveling recently. I've really, really, really relied on Waze. It's an iPhone.
Oh, it's so cool, isn't it?
Yeah, an app for Android and iOS. That is also going to be part. They're feeding data to the new Apple Maps. But basically, here's the idea. It's a turn-by-turn GPS.
Oh, really? Is this where the maps data for
it's coming from a lot of places, including TomTom. But I think what Waze has that other people don't is a social layer baked in in terms of reporting. If you're using the app, you're feeding back data to their server. So they can determine how fast, fairly accurately, each route is going. And also there's more direct reporting where if you're in a standstill or you see an accident, you can report it, and now they'll reroute you somewhere else, kind of on the
and line. Everybody else now, and which is great. Well, it's a way to
with waves,
a way
yeah.
to socially support your buddies. I love it.
So for me, you know, if I'm trying to get from my office in San Francisco back to my place in Oakland, I know exactly what the entrance to the Bay Bridge I should get on by that time of day, depending on how backed up 80 is. Or if I'm coming out to Petaluma, I know when there's a accident on 580 that I should be going around in these crazy farm roads, which I've done two or three times. It's fantastic. It's free. And a real quick story. So I was doing a thing in Palo Alto, and I'm new to this area, so I'm not used to things that I use on the internet being real places, like businesses where that have signs and people in there that create the products. So I just have a habit, an uncanny habit of just walking in like a hayseed and just like talking about how much I enjoy their stuff. So these very...
You guys have a store.
No, I literally walked in and I was just like these very quiet, polite engineers. I'm just like, hey, man, I love your app, man. I use it all the time. Man. I'm new here. It's great. And they were just very polite and they just were like, okay, thank you. Here's what's in our new version. Please leave. You're scaring us.
People never visit us.
Yeah, they're not used to visitors, but I visited them. I think they're great. Go ahead and pick it up. It's free.
This is San Francisco. If you fire a gun in the air to show how happy you are, that's going to be taken very, very differently than it might back home.
Exactly. Back from Florida. That was how you told your mom you loved her, was by firing an automatic weapon in the
mom,
air.
Mom, I love you. Stay back. Waze is really, really, really cool. I can't remember my login, but I have it on the iPhone. It's nice because this makes perfect sense. You've got a GPS, you're driving along, it feeds everything right back.
Yeah. I will say, in terms of it connecting, like I have AT&T out here, it sometimes can be a little dodgy when it gets on low.
That's another thing connection. That we do so well in the Bay Area.
Yeah,
AT&T.
Is horrifying AT&T service. Yeah. But I'm a huge fan, so pick it up.
So I got a couple of things to tell you about. First, a little plug for our friends. This is was a previous pick of mine, Alfred app, it's called. And if you ever used Quicksilver, it's very similar. In fact, when Quicksilver kind of went away, I switched over to Alfred, and I've been really happy. So it's one of those apps where, in my case, I press Command Space, or I guess I use Alt Space, and I could type the first three letters of an application or a name, and it will pop up, or a website. This has so many additional features that I just really love. It really has replaced Quicksilver in my heart. And they even have a power pack now. This is called Alfred app. You can get it on the App Store, but if you want to use the power pack, you should probably get it from Alfred app. But let me tell you a little bit about something that's going on right now. You know that we have a really great company called CashFly that provides us with bandwidth for all of our shows, including Mac Break Weekly's video. They're joining up with Alfred app for a contest just for you, you Twit viewers. You got 20 power pack licenses, the high-end license for Alfred 1.3. So if you visit alfredapp.com/twit and add CashFly, @CashFly on Twitter, you could be in this contest. I really am a big fan of Alfred. It's been a Mac Break Weekly pick several times. And I just thought this is really cool. So thank you, CashFly, for giving us bandwidth for all of our shows. And thank you, Alfred, for a great little app that everybody who uses a Mac should have. And now here is a great way you can get a power pack license or lifetime upgrades free forever.
It should talk to you like Michael Caine.
It should, Alfred.
Yeah.
And the Batman.
A power pack the size of a tangerine.
I think they are British, so they probably
There's
could do that.
A power pack the size of a tangerine.
She was only 16 years old.
And then this one, Gary Koffler sent me a link to a Cult of Mac article about something called Lion Tweaks. You've heard us complain over and over and over again about the skeuomorphic features of, iCal and all that, the little stitching and all that stuff. Well, Lion Tweaks is a free app, although if you go to their website, ifrederick.com, he does offer you a chance to give him a little donation, which I would do.
Throw him a few dollars.
Throw him a few bucks, but you can download it for free just by clicking the link. And let me launch Lion Tweaks using Alfred app, by the way, and show you. Oh, I have to move it to my... I haven't done that yet. Check automatically for updates. So you can change, for instance, I complained a while ago, and there is a command line to make the user library folder always visible. You don't have to hit the option. Mm-hmm. But you can just click here, and it's done.
Library is visible. Enable the 2D dock, remove system window animation, remove... But if you go down, you'll see you can get rid of some of... Change iCal leather to aluminum. Yes.
Boom.
Yes. And then it's going to launch an installer, but I won't do that. There's a lot more little tweaks in here. This is Lion only. It is free, but donations are asked for. IFREDRIK.com/applications. It's called Lion Tweaks 2. And thank you, Gary, for pointing that out. I think it's a really handy little tool to turn off the leather. We do this show at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday. No, not Monday through Friday. Why did I say that? Just Tuesday. Once a week. Just once.
It lives Monday through Friday in your heart.
It lives in my heart.
You take the weekends off.
All the time. 11 a.m. Pacific is 1800 UTC if you want to join in. Watch us live, but we make on-demand versions available after the fact on our website, twit.tv, and everywhere fine podcasts are aggregated. Andy Anako can be found at the very nice Chicago Sun-Times. Justin Robert Young's in here to do NSFW. We got
show.
A new time.
NSFWshow.com. Yes.
We have a new time for you, right? No. You're on the old time. We moved those hams away from you.
The hams, the ham.
They went to Wednesday because they were a little confused. But
it was probably the oddest pairing.
It was not a good pairing.
Ham Nation and NSFW was pretty hilarious.
So now I think it's all about Android.
All about Android and NSFW. And last week we actually had a fun little crossover.
That's perfect.
With All About Android.
So tonight, Tuesdays at 6?
7 Pacific time.
7 Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern.
Eastern time. Sarah Lane's on tonight. And we get ever closer to releasing our big book hoax. Which will come.
Oh, stay next tuned week. For that.
So I don't know. It's a pretty randy idea. So I don't want to discuss it here on the prudent.
Save it for the randy NSFW. Sarah is launching a new show, and I hope she'll talk about it on NSFW. Oh. Our iPhone show.
Oh, we'll make her
next week. i5 for the iPhone will be on Mondays, and I'm very excited about that. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work. Break time is over.